All right, hello again. For this morning, the lesson is the same as the scripture reading, which is Proverbs 31 and the end of it, verses 10 through 31. and it's a pretty well-known passage, but I wanted to just talk about it. Even still, I learned and saw some things in it I didn't see this week, so I hope you will also. it is last week we did Esther, and so kind of in the theme of passages about women is kind of where my mind is on that. This is in the book of Proverbs. And when you think of Proverbs, you don't think of poems. I don't, anyway. Proverbs, you think of Proverbs, right? Little one-sentence nuggets of wisdom. You know, spare the rod and spoil the child. That's about it, right? You know, just a quick little thing, and that's about it. But there are some sections, at least this one, that actually forms a poem. And why do I say it's a poem? We'll get there. But it is most assuredly a poem, these 22 verses. And that's a clue, if you know anything about Bible poetry, that there's 22 verses. So, forgot to do there's papers in the lobby if you wanted to grab one. I followed the same kind of format I did for one of the other poems before. So we'll start with the overview. Like I say, I think most people know this poem, but, it's about a woman. We read it anyway. About a woman. And I think, Paul's translation said, a wife. I have King James and it says, you know, virtuous woman. But I think, I'll make this point later, but I think wife is the more accurate word, because of the verses that follow talk about her husband. So there's a clue, right? So she's an amazing wife and mother, and just a really good example in scripture here. She works hard. She's put it in modern terms, a logistical wizard, right? You know, just keeping everything going. I used to work with a woman who called herself chaos coordinator. I think that fits too, right? And moms know what that means. I think another key aspect in this is that she makes her husband shine. You see that here and there throughout, is that what she does makes him look good. Literally, I think, and figuratively. and then she is generous and a good moral example, especially to her children. And she's praised. It's kind of the overview of what goes on in this poem. And why do I think it's important or noteworthy? That might be a better word. I'll think about changing that. Anyway, why is this a noteworthy poem in the Bible? And I think it's because, you know, we... when we think of a godly woman, we rightly think of her as submissive, and that's right. But it doesn't mean she is helpless. And this poem brings that out. Is there's so much that she does, and she's good at, and she really is a crucial part of the household. And not just as another servant or something, but as a really, key member, in a sense, a leader, in her house, but not more than her husband. And I think that's kind of the point, is that even though she is dignified and respected, she's still completely under the authority of her husband. And so, just a really good example of a godly woman. As far as themes, I don't, it's about her, but, beyond that, I didn't see a lot. I feel like there is a theme, that her husband is there. So he's there at the beginning and the middle and the end. So the beginning verses 11, verse 11 talks about the husband, and the middle, which I believe is 23. Yes. What I call the middle, I know it's not the exact middle, like verses 20 and 21 would be the exact middle, but the rough middle, verse 23, talks about the husband, and then right toward the end, verse 28, talks about her husband. So it seems like he's a thread throughout. And we'll get to that in time. And then I don't know if this has anything to do with anything, but the idea of the gates, is mentioned twice, which is kind of interesting. I don't know if there's a lot to that, but, verses 23 and 31, the husband is known in the gates. And then, what is 31? Her own works praise her in the gates. So, just the idea that it's just beyond, it's beyond her own household, that she and her husband are recognized. So, all right. How do I know it's a poem? It's an acrostic. Remember this? Remember this from high school or anything like that when you studied poetry? It is 22 verses, one for every letter of the alphabet. Wait, are there 26? Well, yes, in our language, but in Hebrew, there's 22 letters. And this is written in Hebrew. And so 22 letters and 22 verses. And so every verse in order is a verse, is a letter of the Hebrew alphabet. So it must be one chunk, as a poem, in these verses. So for certain, this is one unit and it is a poem. to break that down a little bit, if you want to get a little nerdy here, if you look at it in English, right? my kids were laughing, so I'll skip ahead and then come back. But, you know, I talked a couple weeks ago about how when I look at poetry, I highlight each pronoun in a different color. A lot of pink in this one. She and her is, and it like straight down the side. She, all the way down, right? So, I'll come back to that slide, but, and in English, it almost all starts with she. So you're like, how does this start with a different letter every time? Well, the way it's written in Hebrew is a little, you know, switched around from how we do it. It almost sounds like the way Yoda talks in Star Wars. Like, it's like the verbs and the nouns are just all over the place in the sentence. So like if you looked at verse 11, so Hebrew goes not A, B, C, D, but Aleph, Beth, Gimel, Daleth. There's not C, it's G instead, so who knows, right? But, someone could, I'm sure, explain the origin of our alphabet. But anyway, so verse 11 is the letter B or Beth, and in Hebrew, the sentence would go something along the lines of, trusts in her the heart of her husband, and so on and so on. So it's not in the same way as, you know, we would say, the heart of her husband trusts in her or something like that. But, trusts is the first word and the trusts, I didn't write it. Oh, it's on here, right? Batach is that word trusts. And so that's the B, you know, if you can kind of picture this stuff. Yeah. Excuse me. Okay. So it's an acrostic, different letter each time. Is that all there is to the poem? Until this week, that's all I ever knew about. So I decided to dig a little more, see if there's a little more structure to it. Oh, yes, there is. And so I'm going to have a lot of fun explaining that as we go on. So I did my pronoun highlight thing. Again, you notice the blue, which is he or the husband, kind of pops up at the beginning, middle, and end. So you catch that theme there. As he's just shows up a little bit here and there, but right at the beginning, middle, and end. So you kind of know he's a thread throughout. The pink kind of goes all over the place, but you notice like the end, you get, is the only place where you get more colors. So that kind of breaks it off into its own, conclusion section. Is the children in yellow, the husband in blue, and you know, thou or you in green, and the Lord in there. So you get all these different sort of people showing up at the end, even though the rest of the poem was mostly about her. So the conclusion definitely stands out as its own section of 28 through 31. And then I think, you know, it being about, the husband, at the beginning also kind of breaks that off. And then, and then you'll see, I think the sections themselves kind of do kind of, you know, manifest themselves, just in the sentences and what they're talking about. So, so then you've got the big middle section, which I further broke that down into three, other sections. The big chunk of all the activities she does, lots of verbs. And then this middle section about clothing. And then the, and then two little verses there, about how she's very thoughtful. So, all right. So now let's, we'll dive into that in detail. So verses 10 through 12, I'll go ahead and read it again. This is King James. Who can find a virtuous woman, for her price is far above rubies. The heart of her husband doth safely trust in her, so that he shall have no need of spoil. Let's say through 12. She will do him good and not evil all the days of her life. And like I said, wife, I think fits better there. Wife and woman is the same word in Hebrew. So you, if you're a translator, you could kind of pick between either woman or wife. And like I say, for some reason, King James picked woman, which, you know, is not wrong, but I think the wife is probably the more accurate word in the context here. And ESV says wife. I'm not sure what Paul was reading out of. But he had wife there. So that makes sense. And like I said, it you know, it follows, the heart of her husband. So she's obviously married. and so on. So, excuse me. The other thing I thought was kind of neat is, that last phrase really kind of caught my eye, or my ear, I guess, all the days of her life. And so, you know, I'm like, this sounds like Psalm 23, you know, where he, you know, it says, just at the end there, thou anointest my head with oil, my cup runneth over, right? So I have plenty, right? And so the end of verse 11, I'll just read 11. The heart of her husband thus safely trust in her, so that he hath no need of spoil or no lack of gain or something like that. He doesn't need anything, right? Because his cup runs over. You know? So, I mean, I kind of see a similar language there. And then in Psalm 23, surely goodness and mercy shall follow me all the days of my life. And verse 12 of this proverb, she will do him good and not evil all the days of her life. I'm sorry, of her life. So, yeah. And then the ending of the psalm, you know, I'll dwell in the house of the Lord forever. And I mean, that's not in the poem exactly, but I mean, isn't that kind of the idea, right? It's about the godly household. So I don't know. I just thought it was kind of neat. The parallels to Psalm 23 there. she's, I'd say, that good of an example that there's parallels you can make to the Good Shepherd there. So, okay. So we're in the middle section, and then the first section of the middle section, as I broke it down. So verses 13 through 20, this is kind of the biggest chunk. And this is really well known, right? This is all the things that she does. So read it again. Verse 13, she seeketh wool and flax and worketh willingly with her hands. Now the word hands comes up a lot through these verses. She is like the merchant's ships. She bringeth her food from afar. She riseth also while it is yet night, and giveth meat to her household and a portion to her maidens. She considers a field and buyeth it, considereth the field and buyeth it. With the fruit of her hands, she planteth the hands again. Verse 17, she girdeth her loins with strength and strengtheneth her arms. She perceiveth that her merchandise is good. Her candle goeth not out by night. She layeth her hands to the spindle, and her hand holds the distaff. She stretcheth out her hand to the poor, yea, she reacheth forth her hands to the needy. So, you know, just so much, call it industry, is really, it's the word I keep coming back to. It's such a dorky word. I know. I want a better word. That's why I call it, she's very active, but, industry is kind of a good word for that. It's just, she's doing so many things, or like, you know, like I said earlier, she's good at logistics, right? It's like a small little business, almost, is what she's running, it seems. Her household, you know, getting raw materials. I work in a manufacturing plant, so, I can really relate to what's going on here, right? So you get the raw materials into the factory, right? And then, you know, so you can make the goods to sell them. And that's what she's doing, right? She's getting the wool and the flax, you know, she's getting all that in. She brings the food in from afar, as well, you know, for that, sort of manufacturing process of making dinner. if you've, ever tried to make a large meal for people, it does feel like you're working in a factory. but then the kindness also, right? She's good to her servants, her maidens. Verse 20, she gives to the poor and to the needy. So it's not just her own family, but she's considering her servants and even people outside of her household. You know, and then the really memorable one is verse 16, that, you know, she's actually independent enough that her husband trusts her to take money. You know, I don't imagine they had separate bank accounts. I mean, I think it's the family money, that she's using to go, you know, look at a field, figure it out if it's worthwhile, and then buy it, you know, not needing to necessarily go and, ask her husband if it's okay or something, you know, which is good because, you know, if he's off to war or something, she's alone running the household. Maybe with the help from the servants in this case, but still, she's got that need for independence, and she's comfortable in it. So, okay. This one I had the most fun with. So like I said, I broke this poem up into, you could kind of say, three sections of the introduction, the conclusion, and then the big middle section. And then the middle section, I also broke up into three sections, you know. And so this is the middle section of the middle section. And it itself has this neat, I think, design of what we call a chiasm, where it has an outer section and a middle section and an even more inner section. So this is like, this is classic Hebrew poetry at work. Where it just keeps getting, you know, going from outward to inner to inner to inner to inner to inner. And so the dead center of this, I'm jumping way ahead, but the dead center of all of that, verse 23. So that's why I feel like that really is the middle of the psalm, even though it's not the middle number, out of 22 verses, which would have to be like, you know, somewhere between the 11th and 12th verse or whatever, right? As far as the design of the poem, verse 23 is, to me, the absolute dead center of the poem. I'll come back to that point. Okay, so I broke off this section because I saw the word clothing came up a lot. So verse 21, her household is clothed with scarlet. Verse 22, coverings of tapestry, clothing is silk and purple. Verse 24, you know, fine linen and girdles. And then 25 is a neat little twist where clothes is figurative. So it says strength and honor are her clothing. So not literal clothing, but it's as if she's clothed with this dignity, right, and strength. So let me go ahead and read the verses again. Should have done that first, but 21 through 25. She is not afraid of the snow for her household, for all her household are clothed with scarlet. She maketh herself coverings of tapestry. Her clothing is silk and purple. Her husband is known in the gates when he sitteth among the elders of the land. She maketh fine linen and selleth it. She delivereth girdles unto the merchant. Strength and honor are her clothing, and she shall rejoice in time to come. Take a drink quick. Like I said, you see clothing in four of these five verses, and except the one. Which one? The one in the middle. This is kind of a classic Hebrew poetry, you know, trick or whatever device. You get this section that is obviously all tied together with this word clothing, and it just appears over and over again, and so you know that this is a big section, but the verse in the absolute middle seems to be completely unrelated. And it's not like these people don't know what they're doing. It's not like they, you know, this is a poorly written poem or anything like that. It's the opposite. They put a verse like that in the middle, completely out of place, to make a point. And so, if you're like me, you're like, what on earth is this verse doing here? And so that's the fun, is to try to figure out why did they sandwich this verse in between these other ones about clothing. So the verse is about the husband. Her husband is known in the gates when he sitteth among the elders of the land. So I would say, for one, he probably is well-dressed. It makes the point that she takes good care of her family and makes sure that they're dressed very well and nicely. And so that would be good. It would be good if the husband looks good, because he's got somehow an important position. Either he already had it, or she's helping him get there. But he's got this important position that he's known in the gates, which I couldn't tell you the exact historical significance of that, but it's obviously implied that this is important, that he's, you know, the gates is, I mean, you can read in your commentary or whatever, you know, it says something about how the gates is where people would gather or something, I don't know. But it's an important place, right? to us, it would be, you know, in the board, right? Or on a TV interview or on a podcast or whatever, right? Whatever the modern application of this is, somewhere important. And sitteth among the elders of the land. So again, among important people. He's there. So that's an honor that he's able to even be there. To sitteth among the elders of the land. and so, you know, she's basically, what I get from this is everything in this poem, everything that she's doing, all funnels into this verse, that she is doing it to make her husband look good. Literally, with clothes, and I think figuratively, because the household is doing well, you know, and is well taken care of, and things like that. So, that's kind of what I see in here, is that it all funnels down to that. These five verses, I kind of drew them like this, in this indented way, because I see a parallel in here. So again, it's called a chiasm. So you get the first and the last verse are somehow similar. And so the first verse is, she is not afraid of, in this case, the snow. And the last verse is, she has strength and honor. So if you have strength, you're probably a lot less afraid of things, right? Like, if you're weak, you're going to be more afraid of physical danger, for example, right? So, but if you're strong, you're less afraid. So I think those are very much similar, nearly the same idea, is that she's unafraid and she's strong. So that's the first and the last verse. I see the connection there. Then the next ones, the verse 22 and 24, going one step in from each direction, both start the same. She makes this and she makes that, right? So There's a parallel there, and that just leaves that one verse in the middle. So you kind of see that cascading, you know, nesting structure of the verses. So really kind of neat thing in the middle of the poem that I had never seen before. But I think is very much just right there, you know, almost in plain sight, but not really. You kind of have to dig for it. But yeah, I would say this is definitely the middle of the poem. And in Hebrew poetry, you know, in English, we try to build to a conclusion. And it's the end that's important, but in Hebrew, it's the middle that is the thing, the climax, if you want to call it that in literature terminology, but it's the middle that's the focus. And so this is the middle of the middle of the middle, you know, here. So, all right. So then our last section in that middle part is just two verses, and this also was a little tricky to try to see what to make of it. So I'll read these verses, 26 and 27. She openeth her mouth with wisdom, and in her tongue is the law of kindness. She looketh well to the ways of her household, and eateth not the bread of idleness. So I guess, you know, first, these are all kind of long-term goals in different ways. So she opens her mouth with wisdom. When you're trying to, you know, teach your kids something about wisdom or something with wisdom in it, you're not just teaching them a here and now lesson of don't touch the stove, it's hot, but you're teaching them a broader principle that hopefully they'll carry with them through their life. You know, that's a long term kind of thing. And then in her tongue is the law of kindness. And that's kind of, to me, both, right? It's a here and now, you know, be nice to people. Cause if you're mean, they'll just be mean right back to you, but also a little bit of a long-term thing as well. You know, is you want to have a reputation of being someone who's nice. Verse 27, she looketh well to the ways of her household. That again seems like more of a long-term kind of goal. And then eateth not the bread of idleness. So again, that's another one that's kind of both, right? It's a here and now, you need to keep moving. But it's also a long-term thing, you know, idleness. Proverbs talk about this, right? You know, if you're idle for too long, thorns grow over your garden, and then it's a real mess to try to clean it up, right? So, it's a long-term and a short-term principle at the same time. So, you know, that's to me somewhat face value of these verses. But then I noticed the mouth thing keeps coming up, right? So she opens her mouth, her tongue is the law of kindness, and then at the end, she eats not the bread of idleness, she eats not the bread of idleness, right? So the mouth, the tongue, and the eating, you know, all kind of a mouth kind of theme going on here. It's like, okay, so yet again, we're in a situation where you got three verbs that kind of go into a theme, and then there's one that doesn't seem to fit, and that's the look. Right, so she looks well to the way of her household. Verse the beginning of 27. Excuse me. So, why is that there? You know, what is the connection? And I'm not certain. The thing that came to my mind is Psalm 34. I'm not going to turn there. I have the verse on the board, but Psalm 34. If you have a heading written by you know, the editors of your translation for that psalm, it'll probably say taste and see. That's what's famous about the psalm. And verse 8 is where that comes from. It says, "Oh, taste and see that the Lord is good. How blessed is the man who takes refuge in him." And so these two verses here, excuse me, in the Proverbs, I think you're saying the same thing, right? Taste, you know, the mouth, the tongue, and the eating. And see is she looks well to the ways of her household. So I don't know. That's my best attempt at trying to, you know, make a connection there. And I think the ending of that verse in the Psalm 34, how blessed is the man who takes refuge in him, is kind of neat because you think about this proverb, and, you know, how blessed is the family that takes refuge in this woman in Proverbs 31. So, I don't know. I feel like there's a parallel there, but, you know, if not, it's fine. I mean, I think you can make some parallels, but I'm not entirely sure what the best conclusion is out of that section in Proverbs 31. So, all right, and finally, in our walk through this, I got a couple more final thoughts, but the last section of Proverbs 31 is these last four verses, 28 through 31, and praise is the theme here. Let's read it first, and then we'll talk about it. Verse 28, her children arise up and call her blessed, her husband also, and he praiseth her. Many daughters have done virtuously, but thou excellest them all. Favor is deceitful and beauty is vain, but a woman that feareth the Lord, she shall be praised. Give her the fruit of her hands, and let her own works praise her in the gates. Excuse me. All right. So one more time, we got a section with multiple verses, and only one seems to stand out as not being part of the theme. So verse 28 mentions praise, 30 and 31 mention praise, and 29 does not. So what is going on there? So it was a little riddle I had to try to figure out, and I think the word is excel. I'm not sure how all the translations render it, but verse 29, many daughters have done virtuously, but thou excellest them all. So that last verb there. Excuse me. So why do I say that? So excel, the Hebrew word, it's actually two words, at least in the King James Strong's kind of thing, is to rise above, to ascend above. And so, you think about praise, you know, you praise someone, you tend to look up, you're looking at them, you know, if they're, you know, somehow taller than you, or they're, you know, standing, I hate to say this, I'm standing on a platform, but if they're standing on a platform above you, you know, you look up to them to give them praises, right? You kind of, you know, lift up praises to them, we might say. And you know, verse 29, that she excels them all, she rises above them all, you know, it's, well, okay, she's, you know, she's above, right? So, there's, I think, an obvious logical connection there. And then the words actually sound pretty similar. So praise is halal, and to rise above is Allah all. So I think it's pretty close. that's definitely the best candidate there in that section. So but yeah, just a neat conclusion of the poem. Just that she is praised by her family. You know, the reason she should be praised is that she fears the Lord. That is the most important, I'd say, conclusion out of this entire poem, is that not just that she's, you know, an amazing, you know, business owner or whatever, but that she fears the Lord. And all of this is in service of that. And, so that's the poem. Just a couple final thoughts about it. This is the very end of the book of Proverbs. And it's about a woman, and the beginning of the book of Proverbs, starts out the book saying we need to follow wisdom. And in that first chapter, it says that wisdom, you know, it kind of illustrates wisdom as a woman. So kind of a neat, you know, way to end the book is where it starts, where wisdom is like a woman, and it ends where here is what an actual woman would look like, who is doing well, who is acting in wisdom, who fears the Lord. I didn't even catch this as I'm saying this out loud now. The beginning of the book is, the fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge. So it really is a connection, I think, there between the fear of the Lord and the wisdom and the woman, right? And she's really embodying in a real actual person, wisdom. Whereas the beginning of the book is wisdom looks like a woman. So, yeah. So neat little connection there. And then, you know, as I'm sure many people have pointed out throughout time, there's Titus chapter 2 and verse 5 talks about, you know, we call homemakers or workers at home, that you know, that's the role of a young woman. And, that's very true, but, you know, we don't necessarily have to take that to mean that she never has to leave the house, right? There's certainly many ways to fulfill this and still be a homemaker. yeah, and all these actions and levels of independence and delegated authority, and whatnot, within her household. So, specifically. So, that's about it. It's just a short version of what we've already talked about, if you're taking notes. so we'll end there. By way of invitation, you know, we think about, how much, all that this woman does, like I say, is in wisdom. And really, like I say, you see the parallels in her life and the life of Jesus and what he taught, right? You know, I mean, it's amazing how much you can compare her to that Psalm 23, which we often think about as describing Jesus, the Lord is my shepherd. You know, and I've made note before that, the book of 1 Peter, chapters 2 and 3 talks about, you know, Christ suffered in this way. And then chapter 3 starts with, likewise, you wives. And so it's quite amazing and quite an honor, you know, that, women often throughout scripture have this, you know, comparison, in many ways that is like Christ. And so, we as men, you know, of course are asked to lead. Well, we talked about it this morning. Man, I'm going to do that every time, aren't I? I almost made it through. But the elders, you know, lead like the chief shepherd, right? In our families, we lead, in the way that Christ is the head of the church. And we as men are supposed to do this, but even in other ways, women also have that same sort of analogy, in different ways, in a different way, not in the same role. Do not take me to mean that, very different roles. But you see Christ, in the behavior of a godly woman as well. And so, if there's any here this morning, that, want to obey the gospel and, follow in the footsteps of Jesus, and do what he commands, and to obey him for the rest of your life. Maybe you've seen that example in your parents, or other godly men and godly women. Then this is a good time to, come forward, or if there's any that want the prayers of the saints, then we can do so. You can come forward as we stand and sing.